Awesome Mania. I'm Michael Lindenbaum, along with your undisputed champion, Mr. Ben Taylor.
That's right. It's me, Ben Taylor, a.k.a. half asleep.
Half asleep. Well, it is Saturday morning.
I'm not half asleep. I just thought it would be a good nickname, given that it's... I got up at like 4 o'clock this morning.
Why up so early?
Well, just some of my medical issues. When I wake up, I can't get back to sleep. So what will happen is I'll record this, I'll go do a thing, and then I'll take a nap this afternoon, probably.
Gotcha. So we have a big show.
We don't really, do we? It's like, when we say a big show, it's usually one that's going to take like 3+ hours. What's actually the case is there's like 3 or 4 things that we need to talk a lot about, and then not a whole lot else, really.
Yep. So we got, we're going to be recapping both NXT TakeOver In Your House, WWE Backlash, and we got news and notes, and of course, as always, the positive thing in wrestling.
Yeah.
So let's start off. Ben, where should we start off in news and notes? Should we start off by addressing...
Make the statement.
All right, we're going to start off with that. So, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, this is our statement currently in regards to everything going on in regards to the speaking out movement. The recent allegations about a number of people in the wrestling world being accused of sexual harassment / assault are very disturbing and needs to be addressed. We know currently that multiple wrestlers have been stripped of titles and have been removed or suspended, sent to rehab, and are being investigated by multiple promotions. An executive has also resigned from a promotion as well. At this time, we want to make it known that this behavior is unacceptable. We support the victims and that we will be observant to these allegations and all evidence pertaining to them as the situation continues to evolve. So that is our statement in regards to speaking out right now.
So the fact of the matter is, we aren't directly involved in any of it. We've not been there when this has been happening. We can't speak directly to any of it. So we're not going to. We're just going to say that we support the victims and so on and so forth. So,
yeah. So,
I mean, we could sit here and list off everything that's happened, but we'd be here till doomsday. So,
yeah. So with that, we're going to move into the news and notes. We're going to start off. We're actually going to end it with the whole Heyman creative WWE.
Yeah,
stuff. That's how we're going to end notes, because
that's probably the biggest block.
Yeah.
Right.
So we're actually going to start off with something that we've actually been holding off for like, what is it now? 2 months, something like that. And that's actually about a storyline that is being done in NXT, which is, as now has been revealed, that Phantasma is really now Santos Escobar.
Yep.
And the kidnappings of Raul Mendoza and Joaquin Wilde. It's actually apparently all based on a terror organization that was active back in the 1970s, known as the Symbionese Liberation Army. And according to Dave Meltzer on Wrestle Observer Radio,
this was reported a long time ago. We've been sitting on this since April, because at the time it was just backstage skits. We didn't really know what was going on. And it felt a bit weird to be reporting on it, to be honest.
Yeah.
But now that the mastermind has been revealed, as it were, um, I'm sure that things have evolved, if you'll pardon the pun, for something we'll talk about later. From the basic, that we're going to base this on a Liberation Army thing and gone to other places as wrestling storylines are wont to do, but we did want to bring it up. So,
yeah. For those who are curious about the history, the SLA was a left-wing terrorist organization that was active in the United States in the early 1970s. They're actually known for committing various acts of violence, most famously the kidnapping of heiress Patty Hearst, the 19-year-old daughter of a publishing magnate, William Randolph Hearst, as she was kidnapped in 1974. But then it was announced less than 2 weeks later that she had joined the SLA. Hearst stated later on that members of the group had threatened to kill her and sexually assault her, which led them to brainwashing and indoctrinating her. Hearst's attorneys would later use the Stockholm Syndrome argument while defending her in court. So that's kind of the basis of this, but it'll be interesting because
it was, like, it, I wouldn't say it's the basis. It was the seed.
Yeah.
It's not like they're going to be echoing that storyline going through.
Yeah.
Right. Like, they don't seem to be following up on the Stockholm Syndrome thing. They don't seem to be following through on the, you know, like.
Yeah. And apparently, and this is according to reports by Dave Meltzer, apparently the NXT superstar is being abducted, and they said that it, apparently it could have been more outside of Wild and Mendoza, but obviously we saw more like attempts, like with Akira Tozawa and others, where it was attempted, but they weren't successful, that they will begin to sympathize with their kidnappers as Hearst did and join them in the new NXT stable, which we now see with Escobar, Mendoza, and Wild. So it'll be interesting to see where this goes and how they continue to build it up in the next several like weeks. So that was that. One of the big things to come out this week was as Raw was going on, I think it was in the last hour of Raw, WWE put out a press release stating that a NXT developmental trainee tested positive for COVID-19.
Yep.
The trainee has not been used on NXT TV and is actually one of the female trainees. As a result, Tuesday's tapings were scrapped as everybody went through testing. And according to reports from people who spoke anonymously, pretty much said that the Tuesday was essentially a massive clusterfuck with everything and that it lacked leadership in how everything was being done. The tapings were finished up this week for next week's Raw, SmackDown, and NXT. And I believe also for Main Event and 205 Live. As a result, Kevin Owens actually refused to partake in the Raw taping.
Yeah, he's pulled out.
However, there's
family.
Yeah, however, they did say that he is expected to be back for the June 29th tapings.
We'll see.
Yeah. yeah, we'll see. I mean, but there's reports that they're already saying that, yeah, he's expected to be back for those tapings. But Kevin Owens has a good reason, because his wife's grandfather passed away a couple weeks ago due to COVID-19.
Yeah.
So there was legitimate concerns about, like, yo. And the good thing is that nobody's being punished for, you know, staying at home and going, no, we have to, you know, we can't do this. And according to the reports, Owens, when he said, no, I'm not not showing up, he was very respectful, and Vince and corporate were very understanding to his situation as to why he wasn't going to show up after the positive test was announced.
Yeah.
And then also apparently it was just also announced yesterday that for Orlando, that everyone is required to wear masks in public. Finally, it's now a requirement. It's not a voluntary thing. So
there will be an argument that the Performance Center isn't public.
Well, apparently, according to all the reports that we've read and heard, they have to wear masks when going into the building, but when they're backstage, they're all having to wear masks. But when before they actually go out to do like their match or the show.
Oh yeah, I'm just saying that like you won't see them wearing masks on TV, for example.
Well, that's the interesting thing. There's a conflicting report on that, because apparently
you will not see people in the ring wearing masks.
Well, no, in the ring, but in the crowd.
That's what I meant. I don't give a fuck about the crowd.
Yeah, the crowd part is going to be conflicting, because there's been reports that it was reported that it was just very lackadaisical and that people just didn't have to wear masks. Another report was saying that Kevin Dunn is banning people from wearing masks inside because it shows like weakness or something. And
so,
like, I'm sorry, but like, if we're going to a wrestling show, especially right now, which we're not going to a wrestling show anytime soon, we'd be wearing masks in the crowd.
Especially since you're filming in Florida, who decided to open up early and then got like thousands more cases.
Just yesterday alone, they had 3,200 cases.
Yep.
It's been going up and up and up every single day. Yep. So get your shit together, Florida. And Texas and Arizona and some other states. But Kevin Dunn, if it's true that Kevin Dunn's saying, oh, I don't want people in the crowd wearing masks, get fucked, dude. Because if anything, you should still be having everyone in there wearing masks, especially now that you're bringing in friends and family to help fill out the crowd.
And another Kevin Dunnism. I've made it quite clear on this program that I hold no respect for Kevin Dunn as it is, right? At a recent taping, Seth Rollins was cutting a promo and referred to the people around the ring as NXT superstars. And Kevin Dunn stopped the taping and announced he should refer to them as developmental talent.
Yeah, I remember.
What happened to NXT being the third brand, man?
Yeah, and not only that, but I also remember, to tag on that, there was one where MVP called them the crowd, called them fans.
Actually, I think it might have been MVP and not Seth Rollins.
And Kevin Dunn, and the thing that I heard was like over like the loudspeaker, Kevin Dunn could be heard say, they're Performance Center recruits.
Yeah.
I'm like,
what he actually called them was NXT superstars, because the point was the outrage was because he devalued them, basically. Yeah.
Especially the fact that you have people like Shotzi Blackheart in the crowd.
Actual like NXT takeover performers.
Regular TV performers. In the crowd. And it's like, you know, because like I think Xia Li was in, Aaliyah has been in the crowd.
Malcolm Blevins has been in the crowd.
Yep.
With his boys, like.
Yeah, so it's like, it's not just Performance Center or trainee; it's your actual on TV talent.
Yeah.
That you're devaluing.
Yeah. Fuck you, Kevin Dunn.
Yeah.
Go to hell. Retire already. I'll talk about you when we get to fucking Bobby Lashley and Drew McIntyre, asshole.
Oh, but speaking of that, Speaking about Kevin Dunn retiring, how is he supposed to do that when he keeps chasing out all of his possible successes?
Yeah, that's true. We talked about that last time.
Yeah. Also, according to multiple sites, Dolph Ziggler and Mustafa Ali are moving to Raw as part of the AJ Styles trade to SmackDown.
Yep.
Evolve WWN has gone on indefinite hiatus, with rumors swirling that the Evolve tape library has already been sold to the WWE.
Yep.
So, all right, now for the meat and potatoes of news and notes.
Well, before
or we get do to you that, have more?
The Evolve. I'm really happy that the Evolve, if the Evolve tape library has been sold to WWE, cool. I'm with that, because it gives not only more things that they can access for a lot of their current talent, like Tomato Chompers, Jonathan Q, Wrestling Gargano, Keith Lee, etc., 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 etc. But if it shows up on the network, even better. Anyway. Yep. On to the meat and potatoes of today's news and notes, as you say.
Creative and WWE. Creative and WWE. So, on June 11th,
yep,
around 7 p.m., Brian Satine...
Which, in all fairness, is 9 days ago at time of recording.
Yeah. But in the 9 days since has been still a very hot topic. Ryan Satine made the announcement on Twitter that in an effort to streamline the creative writing process for TV, WWE has consolidated both teams for Raw and SmackDown into one group led by Bruce Pritchard. Paul Heyman will now concentrate on his role as an in-ring performer as the advocate for Brock Lesnar. So just a little backstory on this. So last June, Paul Heyman and Eric Bischoff were made executive directors of Monday Night Raw and Friday Night SmackDown, respectively. Bischoff's role was to relate directly to the network executives at Fox, while Paul Heyman remained on Raw. Bischoff was quickly fired and replaced by Bruce Pritchard after rumors began circulating that he wasn't cut out for the job, something that Bischoff also kind of confirmed in his podcast. So let me scroll down a little bit. It's the next one that I needed. So in an update from WrestleVote, sources stated that Raw had been a mess backstage with certain changes coming up until the point of airtime. The report also mentions that Heyman is not the only one to blame for the disorder, but he was the one that was going to take the fall eventually. There's been a lot of talk about, you know, how, you know, with some of the releases, AJ Styles is really angry at Paul Heyman because of Gallows and Anderson being released, because Heyman didn't see the value in Gallows and Anderson and pushing them on Raw, which a simple solution would have been from the NXT and give them the put him with Finn. And then there's just a whole bunch of other things where Heyman was always trying to bring things to put on television. He was very active in listening and talking to the talent to help foster and harbor and create, you know, these storylines. And a lot of it just wouldn't go on TV because it wouldn't get past Vince McMahon. And then there was one other note about, oh, the joke about the catering squad, because as you and I talked about this the other night or last night, no, it was the other night. Yeah. You know, when Paul Heyman was the lead writer for SmackDown during the beginning part of the Ruthless Aggression era,
SmackDown 7,
the SmackDown 6, which was Chris Benoit, Eddie Guerrero, Edge, Kurt Angle, The Undertaker, and Brock Lesnar. Edge, Chris Benoit, and Eddie Guerrero were never viewed as top main event talent. until they went to SmackDown. And they were given the opportunity by Paul Heyman. And then, mm-hmm. yes, the seventh one would then be considered also John Cena after Brock Lesnar left. And it, if it wasn't for somebody like Paul Heyman pushing these guys, I mean, granted, Taker and Angle were already main event guys, and Lesnar was already pushed to the moon right off the bat. But those other guys would never have gotten the opportunities. And that's what, and then there's the joke of the catering group, which was Andrade, Zelina Vega, Buddy Murphy, the AOP, Humberto Carrillo, Apollo Crews, and several others who we've been seeing get pushed on Monday Night Raw.
Yep.
Oh, and Aleister Black was another one. And one of the big things, and this came out this morning on Cage Side Seats Rumors, because it was reported, they do a really good job every morning except for Sundays of doing like a rumor roundup. And they brought up something that was brought up on Friday, June 19th for Wrestling Observer newsletter that also notes that when Paul Heyman and Eric Bischoff took over Raw and SmackDown, they had legitimate trade and draft negotiations that led to Bray Wyatt and Braun Strowman to SmackDown, so Raw would get the likes of Aleister Black, Andrade, and Charlotte Flair. They also say that the folks at USA Network were 100% behind making changes to Raw, which was building new stars and essentially working with Heyman's 18-month vision, because that's about how long he needed to really build this up. And then actually are upset when they weren't told sooner about things changing again, with Vince deciding to go, well, I don't like how the ratings are, I'm doing this massive change.
Yeah.
USA was 100% behind Paul Heyman and everything that he was doing. Mm-hmm. Fox, on the other hand, oh, we forgot to throw this out there. Fox,
the Jeff
on
the Hardy other, thing.
Yeah. The standards and practices. So
we'll get to that.
Yeah.
Right. Because what's happened is Paul Heyman has been removed, and he is, and now both Raw and SmackDown are both under the creative purview of Bruce Pritchard, who yep. wasn't even with the company 2 years ago. Just think about that for a minute. Heyman has gone back to his on-camera role, which means he only has to show up whenever Brock does.
Which has concerned a lot of young talent.
Right. And here's the rub. All those people who Heyman was going to bat for, people like Apollo Crews, who recently got put up to the US title, Andrade, I don't think Andrade's in too much of a threat because of his position. Humberto Carrillo, definitely.
Ricochet and Cedric Alexander were two others.
Alexander, Buddy Murphy, things like that. They're all very concerned about their position, and rightfully so, because we've seen that Vince has no plan, right? Vince has proved he has no plan. I mean, all too recently, right, we can point at three, maybe four examples of Vince just suddenly changing his mind as to what the plan is, right?
A big one is actually that Baszler. The Rusev-Bobby Lashley feud and the interjection of Liv Morgan is one.
Well, that was Vince changing someone else's mind. That was Vince kind of overriding Paul Heyman. But like Shayna Baszler, right? She absolutely destroyed everyone in the Elimination Chamber. She literally just destroyed the entire Raw Women's Division, only to get nothing from it. to then not even make it to the roof during Money in the Bank. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, and we haven't seen Shayna since.
Nope. Bianca Belair. They introduced Bianca Belair. She's pushed like a demon for 3 weeks. Then someone in creative decides that because she's aligned with Street Profits and they want to put the Street Profits in a best of seven series, somewhat comedy angle with the Viking Raiders, that
she doesn't fit in with the creative.
Yeah, so she just disappears from TV. What? Is that right? Anyway,
yeah, it's. I'm not happy that this is going down the way it is because, and one of the arguments that was made is that, like, oh, the ratings and, like, okay, everybody's ratings suck right now. You know.
I wonder why.
It's like everybody's ratings suck right now.
Yeah, but I wonder why.
I don't know.
The COVID excuse can't be right because there's more people at home.
I think honestly, one portion is that people are protesting the wrestling because it's like because they view it as being reckless because of the pandemic. That's just a theory. I don't know, man. That was the other thing. And like, so you have the ratings excuse, which everyone's ratings are going down right now. Although Raw did have a bump this past Monday because of the whole Christian storyline. But then the other excuse that I've seen reported is that Vince isn't happy that wrestlers aren't getting over. And it's like, well, you really don't have a crowd and you're forcing your time. Well, here's the other thing. You're forcing the crowd that you have in-house to strictly cheer the faces and strictly boo the heels. You're not letting it be organic. It's forced. And you and I have talked about this before, but Vince and Kevin Dunn really don't listen to the fans because you can tell if somebody's getting over because of social media, of how people react on Twitter and on Facebook. Just read the comments and see what people are saying.
Yep.
So you can tell who's getting over and who's not getting over with us. Like, I'm not going to lie. Apollo, I've never been really that sold on him until this recent push because he's actually been doing a pretty good job on the microphone. He's never been good on the mic. And he's actually starting to show some personality. And if it's true that he's going in for this heel turn, and joining up with MVP in this new possible stable with MVP, Lashley, and maybe Shelton Benjamin. Good. Let's see that help develop Apollo Crews even more. And you got to actually listen to us. You don't go out and say, we're going to listen to everybody and then not listen to us.
Right. But as we have previously established, if they listen to social media, Zack Ryder would have been world champion about 15 times by now.
And Nia Jax would have probably been sent back to developmental.
Nia Jax would be working in a McDonald's somewhere.
So.
Here's the long and the short of it, right? Outside of everything you just said, the more important thing is people aren't getting over because you aren't giving them the opportunity to. Right, the things that get people over are natural things that you don't script, you don't plan, you don't manufacture. And as we're seeing with Drew McIntyre, they're kind of giving him free rein on the microphone. And you can tell because his promos don't sound scripted. Right? They kind of did the same thing with Seth Rollins for a while with this Monday Night Messiah gimmick. And that was going really, really well as well. Like when they just let someone go, it works. But they're not doing that. They're tightly controlling the message, and that's the problem.
Yeah, and that was a and you're just talking about the promos. That was a big advocacy thing of Paul Heyman, taking away a lot of the scripts and kind of going back to like how like Austin Stone Cold Steve Austin has talked about it, where back in the Attitude Era they would just give him bullet points,
yeah,
and just go with it. And that's something that Paul Heyman was doing with Drew McIntyre. He pretty much told Drew and Seth, "Go for it."
Yeah.
Make this you. Because, and it's just like with Drew McIntyre with the title right now. You know, it's like what they always say, the title doesn't make you, you make the title.
Yeah.
So, and yeah, that was one of the biggest things that Paul Heyman advocated for, was more of that freedom for the promos, to make the promos more organic.
And what didn't inspire a lot of people with a whole lot of face for this situation was on the very next SmackDown, which now has the same creative team as Raw, I would like to point out. Bruce Pritchard and Vince McMahon thought it would be really funny to do a urine angle, which violated Fox's
standards and practices. Because, yeah, it aired on the East Coast. Fox got pissed. And then it got edited right when they're about to, like, do the urine throw. They cut right to commercial.
Yeah. So, Vince not only has poked the bear at USA by removing Paul Heyman, he's poked the bear at Fox by ignoring standards and practices.
Yep. So
let's talk about NXT.
Yeah. Let me get out of news and notes, and let me just go to NXT in your house.
Yeah.
So I think we know this last time when we talked about NXT in your house, that this kind of landed around the 25th anniversary of the first In Your House.
Yep.
Which is kind of cool and was not actually done on purpose. It's just how things worked out with the whole pandemic and everything. So that was kind of cool. So starting off looking at the results, you had Mia Yim, Shotzi Blackheart, and Tegan Nox defeated Candice LeRae, Dakota Kai, and Raquel Gonzalez in a 6-woman tag team match. Then you had Finn
Balor. What did you think of that match?
I think there was just too much in it. Because you had the Mia Yim, Candice LeRae feud going on, and then you've had the stuff between Tegan and Dakota and Raquel going on, and Shotzi is just kind of
just
in
there.
Yeah, and I know that this past Wednesday on NXT, you had Shotzi and Tegan with the tag team title shot.
Yeah.
Which is all fine and dandy, but they'd only been like, they haven't even really been a tag team.
No.
So I didn't really understand. Like, I guess because they beat Dakota and Raquel for that opportunity.
Yeah.
So, like, okay. So, like, they earned it in a match at least, but they still haven't been around that long as a tag team to really warrant something that high profile yet. So I was kind of indifferent to this match. I mean, good grabs, but kind of indifferent to the whole, there's too much going on in this.
Yeah, it was like a 10-minute match, if I remember rightly.
9 minutes and 51 seconds.
That is not a lot of time for six people to all get their stuff in.
Yeah.
You know, like, gives each person like a minute and maybe 3 minutes. No, not even that. It gives each person
minute
2 minutes, 15 seconds or something.
Yeah. In the next matchup, we had Finn Balor versus Damian Priest in a singles match that lasted 13 minutes, 8 seconds that would see Finn go over Priest. Really good match.
Yes, very good match.
Very good match.
Very talented competitors. An interesting finish.
Ouch town you, bro, on Damian Priest with that stare spot off the ring.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
I saw that. I was like, ooh, that hurts. But I like that ending shot where you had Finn Balor standing, like Damian Priest is in the corner and he's like kind of just sitting in the corner and Finn is doing the guns to Damian and Damian's still shooting, doing his bow and arrow towards Finn. I thought that was really cool that they did that. Like it was a telling sign of like going like Finn, he's got you, but Damian still got his sights on you.
Yeah.
Next up, we had Keith Lee take on Jonathan Q Wrestling Gargano for the NXT North American Championship in the longest match of the night, which lasted 20 minutes and 35 seconds.
Yeah.
As Keith Lee would retain the title over Gargano.
Yeah.
I like some of the little nods in Gargano's entrance, like how he's coming through like the actual front door. Everyone had been coming through the garage. And like you see the picture of Doc Hendricks on the wall. You just see Gargano look at him and do like the thumbs up thing and then walks out the door. That was kind of funny. I thought this match was really good.
It was okay. It felt like they kind of skipped to the end, right? You know how, like, in previous, you have, like, Culver. Let's take Adam Cole, Johnny Gargano. They had three matches, right? And everything kind of built up over those three matches. Whereas this felt like it skipped straight to match number three. Right. And a few things didn't fire great there because of that. But
yeah. And then not only that, but like, was it the follow up? Like the intergender tag team match was like after this. And it's like, why couldn't you have, as part of the build up, do the intergender tag team match? As like,
well, because they wanted to keep things going for this week, where they announced the triple threat and then the winner takes all match.
No, I get that, but what I'm saying is that, like you're saying, like they kind of skipped over and made this the third match.
Oh, no, they did do an intergender match in the build up.
Okay,
they did one before and one after,
yeah. It was still a good match. I remember how I talked about the use of how the boards can play. Like Lee and Gargano used it really good.
Yeah.
Like anyone who knows me, I actually said it on Twitter live when it happened. That was a good open ice hit along the boards. Mm-hmm.
Except we're not playing hockey.
I know, but like it, I marked out for the spot. I'm sorry. I did. Okay. I enjoyed it. Next up, you had the Last Chance Backlot Brawl for the NXT Championship between Adam Cole and Velveteen Dream, which went 14 minutes and 57 seconds. And as a result of Adam Cole retaining the title, Velveteen Dream cannot challenge for the NXT title while Cole is still champion.
This match was a mess.
I did not enjoy this.
No, me either.
It was probably the worst cinematic match we've had so far of any of them. It was too dark. It was hard to see what was going on half the time. The camera angles were bad.
There's too much for a backlot brawl. They also did a lot too much gimmicky stuff.
Yeah, I wouldn't agree with that.
And I know that there are reports that apparently they were trying to record this earlier, but because it was raining in Florida at the time, it pushed the filming back. So a lot of people were disgruntled while filming this. And it's like, okay, I can understand that. Shit like that happens. I mean, how do you think movies and TV shows actually feel when they do this on a regular basis and shit like that happens? You just got to make the best of this, of a bad situation. But yeah, it's, you know, I don't know. I felt like they tried to do too much and it just got sloppy as a result. Like, the best backlot brawl that I've seen has been the John Cena Eddie Guerrero one, where they did that one on SmackDown when they were feuding over the US title.
Yeah.
Like, that was a good backlot brawl.
Yeah.
And like, they didn't go around, they didn't have a ring. They didn't have, you know, like, they still had wrestlers around, but it was just an enclosed spot.
Let's be fair, the best battle brawl is the Hollywood backlot brawl with Roddy Putt, with my wife dropping everything in the kitchen. with Roddy Piper and Goldust.
Yeah.
Hang on a minute, I need to check on my wife.
Okay, not a problem.
I kept talking. I just had to yell at my wife.
No, no, it's okay. But we'll see. For me, like, I've seen that backlot brawl back by watching on the WWE Network. Mm-hmm. But like, for me, I actually remember watching the Cena Eddie Guerrero one live.
Yeah.
So I think
I would go so far as to say the Cena Eddie Guerrero one is the anomaly, because backlot brawls are gimmicky. It's a gimmick match. The word is in the clue's in the name.
Yeah.
Right. And let's be fair, they didn't do that much gimmicky stuff, right? There was a ladder, there was a car window, which was in the Eddie Guerrero John Cena one as well. They advanced the storyline with Dexter Lumis, which is fine. And there was the pilot chairs. The Uber driver thing was just funny. And we'll get to this when we talk about Backlash as well. But a lot of people thought the Uber driver thing misfired, but I thought it was funny.
But then next up we had Karrion Kross with Scarlett defeating Tomato Chompers by technical submission in 6 minutes and 13 seconds. An absolute squash. And for those who can't see, Ben is just, his eyes are closed and he's shaking his head.
And I don't get it.
Like, I understand that you're trying to build up Karrion Kross as this legitimate monster, but you're taking somebody like Ciampa and you're making him a jobber, essentially.
It's not just that, but I don't get the Karrion Kross thing. I don't think he's very good. Right? Like, just plain and simple, it feels like he's an excuse to have Scarlett on TV. To me, anyway. But I've never really been a big fan of big lads wrestling. So maybe I'm just biased in that. But I don't get the Karrion Kross thing. I don't like that they're already catapulting him towards the NXT title. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. And I definitely think, like, as we know, next week we're going to see Keith Lee defend the North American title against Finn Balor and
Johnny Gargano. Jonathan Q Wrestling Gargano.
And then the winner of that match will then go on to face Adam Cole in a champion versus champion match, which I believe the NXT title will be on the line, or both titles on the line.
Winner takes all.
Winner takes all. And that will be like, what, 2 weeks later or something like
July
that?
July 8th.
July 8th. Okay. So night two of Fyter Fest. But then I think what's going to eventually happen is that I'm jumping ahead a little bit. I see Cole's keeping the NXT title, but not getting the North American, because come the next takeover event, that's when he's going to possibly drop to Karrion Kross.
Here's the issue with that, right? The problem with that is, and it's a problem I had with, now you're talking to me, a man who's sitting in a Kevin Owens hat, right? It's the same problem I had with like Kevin Owens when he first got to NXT, Finn Balor when he first got to NXT, Nakamura when he first got to NXT. When I fell in love with NXT, you had to earn your way to a title shot, right?
We're still waiting for Tyler Breeze's NXT title shot.
Yeah, right?
Like he won that number one contenders match like 6 years ago at this point now. Give him his title shot.
I don't like the walk through the door, get a title shot mentality in any. Looking at UAW. Oh boy, am I looking at UAW. Don't get me started. Don't talk about the rankings.
So about Karrion Kross.
Yeah. So I've never liked that in any company. And I don't like it here, especially. Especially when you have someone like, they're basically setting up a heel versus heel match for Kross and Cole, which is weird, unless they intend to turn the Undisputed Era face.
Question mark.
But yeah. Karrion Kross to me is an excuse to get Scarlett on TV for WWE, much like Skip used to be an excuse to get Sonny on TV, much like Mark Merrow used to be an excuse to get Sable on TV, right? That's how it feels when I watch him wrestle. But I'm not a big fan of big lads wrestling.
Yeah. And then in the main event match was the triple threat for the NXT Women's Championship, which went 17 minutes and 36 seconds as Io Shirai defeated Charlotte Flair and Rhea Ripley to become the new NXT Women's Champion.
Yeah.
And it should be noted.
Rhea Ripley. Yeah.
And it should be noted that Shirai pinned Ripley for the title.
Yeah.
Because this upcoming Monday, Charlotte Flair has a Raw Women's title match.
Yeah. Did you know Charlotte Flair is in line for a big push on Raw?
Really?
In other news, the sky is blue. The Young Bucks call them the greatest tag team in the world.
And water is wet.
Doesn't know what he's doing, and water is wet.
So technically, water isn't wet. It just causes things to become wet by the definition of the word wet. But that's a different conversation.
I enjoyed this match. I'm happy for Shirai.
Absolutely the right decision.
Yeah. I love the Japanese style celebration at the end.
Yeah, with the streamers.
With the streamers and the confetti and stuff like that. I really like that a lot.
Yeah.
And I like how right away as champion, because like a big focus has obviously been on, like, let's be honest, the biggest focus in the women's wrestling has been Bayley, Sasha, and Charlotte.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, while NXT champion Charlotte had been going on all the shows, now that Bayley and Sasha are the women's tag team champions, they're now going on the shows because it's part of the title.
Yeah.
And actually, good on them for actually defending them on NXT. Something that we haven't really seen with the women's tag titles. So I will give them props for that. But like this past Wednesday when they defended the titles against Shotzi and Tegan, Io Shirai cleaned house and goes, nah, I'm the champion. I'm NXT. This show. Yeah, I'm the champ. So I really like how they're taking it that direction with Io. How she's the champion and she's making it known.
Well, NXT have always had that chip on the shoulder, haven't they?
Yeah.
That it's like when you bust your friend's balls and then someone else tries to do it and you're like, excuse me?
Yep.
He's my friend. I can talk crap about Mike. You can't. Well, actually, you can, because... No, I'm just kidding.
And you bust my balls all the time, and I take, because I know...
No, but what I'm saying is, like, I bust your balls because we're friends. But if someone else tries to bust your balls, I'm a bust them. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Unless it's like already been established, like, hey, it's okay.
Yeah.
In advance, but like if it's some random asshole, no, you can't do that.
Yeah,
and that's what Io is doing. It's like, Sasha Bailey, you're as they're pushing it, NXT Legends. You may be NXT Legends. But I'm the now. I'm the future. Get the hell out of here.
And as I said, it's about time that Io got the title. Or Io, sorry, got the title. She's been the best performer in the women's division in the company for a while now. Except maybe Asuka. Who's got the Raw women's title right now? Is it Asuka?
Yeah, it's Asuka.
Bayley on SmackDown. NXT is Io.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm okay with that at the moment.
And actually,
titles are in a good place.
And actually, one of the interesting things is that if you look at it, three of the four major women's titles are on Japanese wrestlers right now. Hikaru Shida in AEW. Yeah. Io Shirai in NXT, and Asuka on Monday Night Raw.
Yeah.
The only one, obviously, is Bayley.
Bayley, who refuses to be called Becky Two Belts, but she is Bayley Doss Straps.
Whatever.
Bayley, like, I've regularly talked smack about Bayley's my skills, but she's been working it as a heel. Anyway, back to NXT. It was the right decision. EO is the one that shone brightest on the night. I don't agree that Charlotte should have not been pinned. Otherwise, what was the point? Because she's just not been on NXT TV since. And what was the point of putting the belt on her in the first place? Like,
well, apparently this is one of those big things. Apparently Vince sees a draw in putting some of the main talent on NXT.
This would be the same people that he's accused of being unable to draw on Raw and SmackDown.
Yeah. So like that's why we're seeing Charlotte on NXT. It's why we're seeing Sasha and Bayley on NXT.
Yeah. Anyway,
who knows who else might show up in the near future?
Anyway.
But that was TakeOver In Your House.
Yeah.
Overall thoughts?
Not the best. It probably the worst TakeOver in a while. Yeah. Some of the nostalgia helped it. The main event was good. Overall, probably about a B+.
I definitely say
big
that
big down points with the Karrion Kross match. I can't believe I'm about to say this about a match with Adam Cole in it, but the world title match, very interesting that it was on in the middle of the show and didn't semi-main. And the six woman tag were detractors from the show for me. The six woman tag, not anything against the women, just too short. Quite simply put, take the Karrion Kross match, throw it out, give an extra 7 minutes to the women's tag match or whatever. But
no. Definitely for me, the highlights were the Finn Balor, Damian Priest match, and obviously the NXT women's title match.
The right match main evented as well.
Yes, 100%. The right match definitely main evented.
Yeah.
So with that, we move on to WWE Backlash.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
Right. So I'm going to do something a bit real time right now, right?
Yep.
So you're going to talk about the first match, what I enact, what I did during the first match, which is take a piss break.
Okay. So the very first match that took place, which was actually on the pre-show, was the United States Championship match between Apollo Crews and Andrade. We would actually see Apollo Crews defeat Andrade to retain the title in a match that would go 7 minutes and 25 seconds. One of the bigger things that came out of this was obviously they were still following up on the storyline about how Andrade pinned Angel Garza on the previous Monday Night Raw to gain this match against Apollo Crews. They built up the tension still where Angel Garza, in a way, kind of costed Andrade the match and obviously took into play this past Monday on Raw as well. So obviously they're building to something of either A, an implosion between Andrade, Angel, and Zelina, which, as Ben and I have talked about earlier, looks like could possibly be the case with the changes with Paul Heyman being removed from creative. Or it could just be something that build them up to make them stronger, as there may be other factions being built up, as we've noticed kind of with MVP. So, and it would actually make a lot of sense, especially if Apollo joins MVP, to keep Andrade, Angel, and Zelina together and maybe get one more into that little group. How was your piss break, Ben?
Great. How was the match?
I wasn't really talking much about the match. I was talking about more about the storyline that's really involving Andrade, Angel, and Zelina in a way.
Kind of the problem.
Yeah. So that match lasted 7 minutes, 25 seconds. Honestly, I don't know if... See, this was the pre-show match. And you and I have talked about how title matches really shouldn't be on the pre-show, kickoff show, stuff like that.
No, I disagree with that. But it shouldn't be the same title.
Kind of like how it had always been with the Cruiserweight title.
Yep. Yeah.
So that, now we start off the main card. Hey, guess who we get to talk about again? Bayley and Sasha. In a triple threat tag team match for the WWE Women's Tag Team Championship that lasted 8 minutes and 50 seconds. Bayley and Sasha would defeat Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross and the Iconics. Overall, I thought this was a pretty good match. Too short for these six women.
Yep.
Definitely too short. I like
this was even shorter than the six woman tag that we had before.
Yes. I did like the fact that when they did the triple threat, that it actually had a member of each team in the ring. So I definitely liked how they did that. But definitely way too short. This match could have used definitely more time. But it's also good to see, as we've seen on Raw and SmackDown, that the feuds with Bliss and Cross and the Iconics are still going on. As we'll see next week on Raw, the Iconics are actually going to be challenging Bayley and Sasha for the tag team titles. And last night on SmackDown, Bliss and Cross attacked Bayley and Sasha, which led to a match between Cross and Banks.
Yeah.
My issue here is that they kept the Iconics off TV for what felt like
forever.
Half a year. And then they bring them back and they're just the same joke, comedy, pointlessness.
I also feel that they got shafted when they came back, because the thing is that they're building up this really good feud with Alexa and Nikki.
Yeah, so they put the belts on Sasha and Bayley.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, well, we're going to put the titles on Sasha and Bayley, and now we have this three-way dance between these three teams, and it's like, why couldn't we just get Bliss and Cross versus the Iconics?
Yeah,
because what they were building up was so good. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, yeah, the Iconics they came back and they're still doing like their comedy heelish thing, but holy crap, the type of responses you were getting on the mic from like Nikki,
yeah,
it was powerful, and you were like, yo, I want to see this.
And let's be honest, the reason that Sasha and Bayley have the titles is because they want it to be like something when they break up, I guess. They didn't need that. The SmackDown title was already there, right? Like,
yeah, and the SmackDown title has been a major conversation piece as part of their whole story already anyways.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
So next up, we have Sheamus taking on Jeff Hardy in the singles match, mm-hmm. which is actually the second longest match on the card at 16 minutes and 50 seconds. This match is longer than the Raw Women's title match. And I believe the Universal title match combined. And it's longer by a little over almost 4 minutes on the WWE title match.
Yep.
As we would see Sheamus defeat Jeff Hardy. Which is interesting. I'm actually intrigued by this because I'm actually okay with Jeff losing this match. A lot of people online were really pissed that Jeff lost. But the reality is that, and it depends on where the story goes, and we saw a continuation where Jeff had the sit-down interview with Renee Young, and then Sheamus had his follow-up interview post that, where, A, this feud isn't done yet, number one. And number two, I think Jeff losing is the right decision for this first match. Because it puts him in a spot where he really has to claw and he really has to try to earn it.
Old school booking.
Yeah.
Being a face from beneath.
Yeah. And so I really like the fact that Jeff lost and that they're trying to build him up this way. I really do like it. But I think the match did go on a little too long. Just a little bit. So, what were your thoughts on Sheamus versus Jeff?
Exactly what you said.
Okay.
Honestly, like, and I'm not saying that to just not have to talk about it. It was the right decision. It was just a little bit too long. Some of the spots are a bit old now. But still kind of fun. Just exactly what you said, really.
Yeah. Next matchup, we have Asuka taking on Nia Jax for the Raw Women's title, which went 8 minutes and 25 seconds. Asuka and Nia would end in a double countout. The reason for this finish was to make Nia Jax look strong for her rematch with Asuka, which ended up taking place on Raw the next night, which she lost via pinfall. Although, apparently, according to storyline, is being under investigation because in that match on Raw, Nia pushed down the referee. Referee was going to disqualify her, but then saw that Asuka had her pinned and then did the what looked like a fast count. So,
when will WWE learn that Nia is bad?
Yeah.
She does nothing for the division other than hurt people.
Yeah, I mean, like, we know that on Monday we're getting Charlotte versus Asuka. And as much as, yeah, we're kind of a little tired of seeing Charlotte all the time, getting always in the title picture, I'm more excited to see Asuka versus Charlotte than I am to see Asuka versus Nia.
You know Nia's getting involved.
Yeah.
The whole point that this is under investigation is so that when Nia interferes in this match and inevitably makes it a triple threat at whatever the next pay-per-view is,
should be Extreme Rules.
Sure. Some kind of Extreme Rules triple threat or something. She's justified, right? Like, I
don't know. Yeah.
You didn't beat me at Backlash. You couldn't beat me without referee interference on the rematch. I'm going to stand here and just be shit at everything. And randomly hurt someone by being within like 2 miles of them.
Next match, we had Braun Strowman take on The Miz and Morrison in a 2-on-1 handicap match for the Universal title that took 7 minutes and 20 seconds. And Strowman would obviously defeat Miz and Morrison. Cool. That happened.
Yep, that happened.
That was when I walked away to go grab my laundry and started doing my laundry.
Yep.
If they're trying
to make Braun look like this unstoppable monster, it's not working. He's just looking like a dickhead.
Especially now that, you know, as we saw on SmackDown, they're going right. And we said it before with Miz and Morrison. Right
back into Bray Wyatt.
They're going right back into Bray Wyatt. And now they're bringing The Fiend into the feud.
And they're bringing the original Bray Wyatt as well.
Yeah.
Somehow.
So maybe it's an incarnation of the Fiend.
Yeah, maybe.
Kind of like how originally when they're doing the Finn Balor Bray Wyatt thing, one of Bray Wyatt's formations with that sister Abigail to counteract against Demon Finn Balor.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how that goes, like to see how they build up that story now. But like, we knew from the outset that they're going to do the exact same thing with Miz, the way they did it with the Daniel Bryan Bray Wyatt feud, yeah, where they put them in the middle of the feud to give it more like length to work the feud.
Oh, for sure. There was never any doubt about that, right? Like,
yeah. So, but yeah. Next up, we had Drew McIntyre take on Bobby Lashley for the WWE Championship in 13 minutes and 15 seconds, which would see Drew McIntyre retain over Bobby Lashley after some mayhem took place involving Lana, Lashley, and MVP.
So, when I initially tried watching Backlash, I had to try twice the first time I watched to this point, right? And then there's a moment in this match where they go up top and Drew goes for a superplex. And in the course of about 6 seconds, there's 10 camera cuts. And I just felt like throwing up. So I stopped watching and went back the next day.
And here's one of the interesting things about this. This was a feud.
Quote unquote interesting.
Well, no, this is a feud and match that Paul Heyman himself was backing heavily. Because, like, obviously Drew and Bobby worked together in Impact.
Yeah.
And they really enjoyed working with each other. So they knew that if they worked together in WWE, it would be money. So, like, as soon as Mania was over, Drew and Bobby pitched the idea to Heyman about them feuding for the title. And Heyman was like, I'm okay with this. Let, you know, obviously Drew was already in the program with Seth Rollins at the time, but it's like, yeah, let's go with this feud.
This whole Lashley MVP thing was Impact as well, right? Together in a stable in Impact.
I don't remember.
They absolutely were. They had them and I think Kenny King in it with them. Yeah, that would be Shelton Benjamin, I guess. And then,
yeah, I don't remember, honestly.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's so sad though that like this is a feud that Heyman is really behind and he gets relieved of his duties before he can kind of see this to fruition.
Yeah.
So. And then next up. Oh, well, it's not noted on here, but it does happen. Next up, we're supposed to have the Street Profits versus the Viking Raiders in a Raw Tag Team title match, which then, for whatever reason, we are sent backstage where
the best thing to happen on the show.
Yeah.
A lot of people shit talk this, right? But I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not going to lie to you. I have not been paying a whole lot of attention to Raw and SmackDown recently. This came out of, I laughed my tits off.
I laughed my ass off, man. I thought a lot of stuff that was done was hilarious.
Yeah.
Like seeing Eric try to take on the giant ninja with the sword. He's like, let me out of it. Like the Street Profits are holding him back. Like, nah, bro, another day. You know? And the fact that we got Akira Tozawa doing something new was really great. Like, I'm a huge Tozawa fan. I love him. And I think he's an amazing wrestler. And seeing him do this was just great. Like, he's like this great big heel ninja leader. He's like the Shredder in TMNT.
Yeah.
It's like, it's amazing. I love, that's why I laugh so hard. It's like, oh my God,
the only thing I didn't like about this was the bit at the end where Jess climbed up on the ladder and basically out of nowhere called Ivar cute.
Well, that's actually been a running bit through all of the vignettes with the Street Profits and Viking Raiders. Through all the competitions, there's always been a woman going, you know, they'll get off the hook for something.
Yeah.
And then the woman would go, you're cute. You, not so much. So it's actually been a running gag the entire time. Right,
but it shouldn't have been a referee.
Well, it made sense to me because Jess was the one coming out to inform, like, guys, you're supposed to have this title match.
Right, but it could have been anyone else at any point in that backstage pool. There could have just been a woman there, right?
No, I agree.
The whole point of referees is they're impartial.
Yeah.
And now if Jess ever referees a Viking Raiders match, everyone's going to be like...
Sorry. I do agree with with the viewpoint, but like who's a female official though that could have done that
spot? Doesn't have to be a female official.
Yeah. It could maybe a backstage interview.
Like if they bust into a locker room or they'd been an interviewer, right?
Yeah.
Or if like because they've been building up the whole Angel Garza and what's her face?
Charlie,
right? If they'd have gone brawled past them and Charlie had been like, you're kind of cute, and Angel Garza could have got involved in the fight, right? Like, you see what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
They could have done it any other number of ways and not had it been a referee.
Yeah.
Hell, it could have been Steph. It'd have been funnier if it was Steph.
That would have been funnier. But
just have Triple H sit there going like,
but
what if it was a dude?
That would have been funny. Oh, Jake Atlas.
Yeah.
Have Jake Atlas be the one to do that. But yeah, it
hired Darren Young to do it. Like, I don't know.
But the reason why it happened made sense. Maybe the person that did it.
Yeah, no, I'm not talking about the reason it happened. I'm talking about who it was.
Yeah. But that happened. That was hilarious. I enjoyed it. I thought it was great. I just liked how, technically speaking, even though it wasn't a match, we still technically got a match.
Yeah.
I mean, at the end of the day, it was kind of a match between two tag teams.
I think this was the best thing on the show.
Yeah. And then, of course, we had the main event, the greatest wrestling match, Randy Orton versus Edge, which went 44 minutes and 45 seconds.
So while you were talking, I did some math, right?
Yeah.
If you take away the pre-show and you take the main card of the show, the greatest wrestling match ever was how long?
44 minutes and 45 seconds.
44 minutes and 45 seconds. As I said, if you ignore the US title match, which is on the pre-show, every other match on the card totals to 53 minutes.
And that's also not including the Viking Raiders Street Profits thing. Because
it wasn't a match.
Yeah. Well, not only that, but it's also not timed.
Yeah, so, but still, the point being, bell to bell, because there was no bell in the
Street Profits
thing. Tag thing. Bell to bell, every other match on the card, on the main card of the pay per view, totaled to 53 minutes, 54 minutes basically. Give them the benefit of the doubt. How's that?
Yeah.
54, 55 minutes. So right. Where do we begin? You know. So I was watching the Raw where this was incepted, right? Where this whole thing was incepted, where Edge was in the ring being interviewed. And Orton came out and challenged him to a normal wrestling match. And Charlie said on the microphone, we could be seeing the greatest wrestling match ever. And I was like, that's a bit of hyperbole, isn't it?
It's also a lot of pressure.
Right? No, but I was like, that's a bit of hyperbole. It's just, but come on, Charlie, you're better than hyperbole like that. And then I heard it again and I'm like, they're actually going with this, aren't they? What kind of absolute melon decides you're going to epithet a match the greatest wrestling match ever before you actually have the match? The answer is someone who wants the greatest wrestling match ever when you search it on Google to be a WWE match.
Yep.
Because people won't search what is the best wrestling match of all time. They'll search the greatest wrestling match, best wrestling match.
and it'll all point to Edge and Orton now. All that search engine optimization and all of that crap. Fuck's sake.
Yeah, and it should be noted that the majority of this pay-per-view aired live. This match was pre-recorded on June 7th. Mm-hmm. And so apparently, they actually, according to the reports, they wrestled the match outright.
Yeah.
Then they did retakes on specific spots.
Yeah.
That's where Edge got hurt.
Yeah.
It was on the retakes. And apparently the retake where Edge...
So Edge fractured his rib, right?
No, he tore his bicep.
And he's had to go for surgery. Or,
oh, no, he tore his tricep.
So they made all this big deal about bringing Edge back, and now he's out because he's had to have surgery.
Yeah, he's out, I think they said, between 4 to 8 months with a torn tricep.
When will these people learn to stay retired?
And apparently how he tore his tricep was on the retake of taking an RKO.
Mm.
So, yeah.
Jesus Christ.
So, match number 3 may not happen until sometime in 2021 at this point.
Just stay out, Edge. You have a family to consider, dude.
Yeah.
Come on.
Well, see, and apparently he wasn't even... This match was never supposed to happen in the first place. The reason that this match ended up happening was because of a knee-jerk reaction from Vince McMahon because ratings.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, the ratings aren't doing well, so we need to get Edge and Randy Orton.
Yeah.
So this whole thing was to try to up the ratings, which it didn't do until this past Monday, which was the post-backlash. And the story was like, oh, well, Edge is hurt, which they announced immediately after the pay-per-view that Edge suffered the injury and that he's already had surgery,
mm-hmm.
which get well soon, Edge.
Absolutely.
And then they did the thing with Christian on Monday night. And the whole reason the rating spiked was because the rumors coming out that day was that Christian's possibly wrestling.
Yeah.
Which, for the record, Christian
didn't happen.
Yeah, well, first off, Christian has not been medically cleared. They could have totally done everything completely differently, where they didn't even have to make it an unsanctioned match.
Mm-hmm.
They still could have done the Ric Flair low blow thing, and it still could have worked and not have it been billed as a match. But still, the fact, the whole Christian storyline, which, don't get me wrong, I think what they did with the Christian storyline was really good,
mm-hmm.
outside of the match portion. That's why you got a ratings boost, because it leaked and people, you know, wanted to see that. But outside that, it didn't do any help for the ratings,
mm-hmm.
you know, bringing Edge and Orton. So you could have easily have done something else. You could have used that time doing this match that didn't need to happen.
Yeah.
To build up other stuff. You could have given more time to the Bayley Sasha, to the women's tag team title match,
mm-hmm.
that triple threat. You could have given more time to Drew and Lashley. You could have put in a different match that people would have been invested in with some of the other storylines going on right now.
You could have done other matches with these two wrestlers, like Orton and someone and Edge and someone.
Yeah, so
like Edge and AJ Styles, give me that.
I mean, we could still possibly get that. We just got to wait for Edge to get healthy.
But that's my point, is like,
I mean, hell, you could have
seen Edge and Orton before, was my point.
I mean, the Intercontinental title was awarded the SmackDown before Backlash. Why couldn't they just have the tournament final be on Backlash?
Yeah.
Have that be your main event. Because we all saw how great the AJ Styles-Daniel Bryan match was.
Yeah.
On SmackDown. Now, so you gave a pay-per-view match away on SmackDown.
Yeah.
So, and don't get me wrong, I enjoyed the Edge-Orton match. But it didn't need to happen.
Yeah, it's nice to see the Punk come back.
Yeah, I will agree with that. It is really good to see the Punk come back. Because that had been banned for a while. For a good, like, 5-6 years.
But it also makes sense in the storyline, you know? Like,
yeah. Especially for Christian, because he essentially retired 6 years ago because of concussion issues.
Yeah.
So definitely for storyline purposes, it definitely makes sense to bring back the Punt.
Yeah. Overall, this show gets like a C from me. This wasn't very good.
Yeah. Definitely highlight was the Viking Raiders
streak. Hashtag skip it.
Yep. So with that, we now move into the positives in wrestling.
Yep.
Ben, have you come up with yours yet?
I have, but you should go first.
All right.
Because I'm still thinking about how to phrase mine.
Okay. So mine is actually Kevin Owens and this whole storyline with Angel Garza. Now, it's actually come out this past week, and I didn't want to put it in news and notes because I wanted to save it for this, is that Vince McMahon actually views Angel Garza as a young Eddie Guerrero. And I can actually kind of see it with Angel Garza. He has that charisma that Eddie has. And it
had.
And add in more of that talent, he's going to get there. And working with Kevin Owens has actually been a very good thing for him, especially working as the heel for Angel. And one thing that I found really great on this past Raw when Owens faced off against Garza is how Owens treats Garza from the entrance, from everything. Because one thing that I was actually taught during my time in MCW by Dan McDivitt is that a good face will legitimize the heel in their entrance. You look at Stone Cold Steve Austin. He never took his eyes off of his opponent when he was feuding with Vince. He always had his eyes on Vince McMahon when making his entrance, when going to all four corners. You look at Kevin Owens' entrance. He is looking around, keeping an eye out for Angel Garza because he is viewing Angel Garza as a legitimate threat to him. And that right there builds up Angel Garza as a legit heel. And I thought that was really good of Kevin Owens to really build this kid up to be a legit threat. So that was the big positive I took out of this week, out of wrestling in general in the last like 2 weeks, is how Kevin Owens is building up Angel Garza as a legitimate threat and how he's viewed as a young Eddie Guerrero by Vince. So hats off, well, literally hats off to the KO for being a damn good storyteller. That's it for me. What you got?
I think I can sum up my favorite thing in wrestling in the last 2 weeks with one word. Ninjas. Like, I'm not joking. Like, it's just a lot of people down talked it. I found it really, really fun. So
I found it very enjoyable. It's given Akira Tozawa something new. And
it's not just that, but there's always a lot of leeway is given to AEW doing lots of different things and having a bit of a schizophrenic attitude, because you got to have things on your card for everybody, right? But then when WWE do it, they get crap talked. I enjoyed the hell out of that segment. And I don't care who knows it. There you go.
All right. So
plain and simple.
Yeah, exactly. So that's been Awesome Mania for this episode. Ben, where can the people find you on the social medias, my good sir?
Oh, yeah, we can start by every 2 weeks on a Monday. You can find me over at
txhthockey.com/power-dorks.
Yep.
doing my journey through Power Rangers.
New one coming out this Monday.
No, it should be next Monday.
No, it's this Monday.
Is it? Okay, yes. Then.
Yeah, because I originally was going to have it come out this past Monday. They're like, no, it's next Monday.
Right. Yeah, yeah. You're right.
So this Monday.
The Mighty Morphin Power Rangers Season 3. Column comes out, in which I also talk about ninjas. And then you can find me over at
txhchockey.com/awesomemania.
Yep, doing this here thing. You can also find me doing the video game thing at
twitch.tv/321_TV.
And you can find me on the Twitters at
Bob T. Goldfish.
Yeah. You actually got it right this time. It took a couple of times to try to tag me on Power Dorks and put the wrong damn tag on it.
Sorry.
You will be. But yeah, you can find me at all those places. That's the main thing.
Yep. And as always, you can find me on Twitter at @thelindenbaum75, Facebook at facebook.com/x75productions, and of course, everything at txhdhockey.com. Please stay tuned, because in 2 days' time, to go along with Ben's journey for season 3, we're also going to be making a Power Dorks announcement. We're going to be letting you know when season 1 is actually going to be coming back with new episodes.
Yep. I've taken a break and done some recording, and
so
Mike's had to edit me swearing a lot. I've broken at least one set of Mike's headphones.
Yes. We're going to be making the announcement on Monday, because ironically, Monday, when your third edition of your journey comes out, it is also the 1 year anniversary of a debut episode of Power Dorks. So, which this past Thursday was also the 1 year anniversary of Nerdy Notions. And speaking of Nerdy Notions, this Thursday, Sasha and I will be live on Twitch doing a Pride Month special of LGBT history and representation in Marvel Comics. We're going to try to have a PowerPoint presentation. If I can't get it to work in the Twitch stream, I will have it on the website for everyone to have. I have to find a PowerPoint program that works on my laptop that's not Microsoft. And then just keep an eye out.
Drew Gulak.
Yes, we are going to Drew Gulak.
So when they told me there was a PowerPoint presentation, I was like, what are you, Drew Gulak? And
I got the joke.
And Sasha's like, what? Apparently Sasha doesn't watch wrestling.
Yeah, Brian and I got it, but she didn't. But it's okay. Yeah. It's okay. But yeah, so keep an eye out for that. That's some of the big stuff coming up this week. Obviously also any NHL, NWHL stuff will be posted as well, because it is a hockey website. So
there's hockey now.
Kind of.
There's news at least.
Yes. There's actually, the great thing is there's always been women's hockey news. So I've always been posting about that. But for the NHL, we're kind of starting getting back into that groove a little bit. But as people will notice with the article that is right below this one, shit kind of hit the fan in the NHL yesterday.
Once again, in Florida.
And Arizona.
No, mainly in Florida.
Well,
Tampa Bay's in Florida, dude.
But Austin Matthews, the superstar of the Toronto Maple Leafs, is born and raised in Phoenix, Arizona, and is currently residing in Phoenix, Arizona, where he's doing his Phase 2 stuff. And Arizona has been spiking. So, because apparently members of the Arizona Coyotes who have been skating with him in Arizona have also tested positive. Out of 200 NHL players that have voluntarily come back for Phase 2 because they're doing rigorous testing, 200 players have been tested, 11 have tested positive. That's 18.2%.
Anyways,
enough about that. But yeah, thank you for listening to Awesome Mania. Take us away, Ben.
My name is Ben Taylor, aka Half Asleep. I'm not sure that Mike knows how percentages work, because 11 is not 18% of 200. Because 11 would be 11% of 100. That being said, guys, gals, and non-aligned pals, in the words of the 16th President of the United States, Abraham Lincoln, be excellent to each other. And party on, non-gender-specific honorifics.
And until next time, we will see you ringside.
Peace!